Blog Talk Radio.
If it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America here on PWTorchDailyCast.com. Good Sunday evening for October 30th, 2022. I am Pro Wrestling Torch columnist Greg Parks. You can find me on Twitter at Greg M. Parks. And we are here each and every Sunday night with you to talk the big shows in pro wrestling. Tonight, we're going to preview WWE Crown Jewel. We'll take your phone calls at 515-605-9345, as well as your emails at wnialivecast@gmail.com. So we look forward to hearing from you. Got a couple of people on hold already. Next weekend is Crown Jewel. It's on a Saturday night. However, I will be out of town next weekend. So Zach Haydorn, PW Torch assistant editor, will be filling in for me. And he will be hosting the show Sunday night. So Sunday night, you'll be able to talk to Zach about Crown Jewel. Usually we go on the air right after the pay-per-view goes off the air, but next week it'll be Sunday night, our regularly scheduled time, 8 p.m. Eastern, with Zach Haydorn. But right now, I want to bring aboard my co-host for this evening, PWTorch.com contributor John Mazzara. John, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight.
Thank you, Greg, for having me back.
Yeah, as always, fun to talk to you here on Wrestling Night in America, especially when we have a pay-per-view preview as we do here tonight. So looking forward to getting your perspective on some of these matches. Let's start right in with the Usos versus Ridge Holland and Butch. This is for the Undisputed WWE Tag Team Championship. The title does not really feel in jeopardy in this one, John. I think the intrigue is more surrounding Jey Uso and what his role is in the under the tutelage of Roman Reigns, you know, in that group. And we saw on SmackDown on Friday in a very I don't know what the word is to use, but a very entertaining segment. I mean, it was entertaining for sure.
It definitely was.
You know, seeing the wrestlers break character like that, that does not happen very often. You know, these are not trained actors. So I guess I think the number of times that wrestlers actually break character like that, I'm surprised it doesn't happen more often because they're not, you know, actors in the traditional sense of, you know, they go to acting school and things like that. So when those kind of actors don't break character, well, it makes sense. But I think it's a credit to the wrestlers in WWE and elsewhere that they don't break character, at least as obviously as everyone in the ring did on Friday night. So that was kind of funny. But, you know, the Jey Uso line that, you know, he doesn't have to answer to Roman Reigns that got the big reaction from the audience. I mean, that's so cool. Like, that's why I really dig this storyline. And even more than a year into it, there's still so many ways it could go. So, John, what's your feeling on what's going to come out of this? I mean, it could go one of two ways. It could go exacerbating the problem. Jey Uso somehow gets further on the outs with the bloodline. Or he makes amends. And this was just kind of like a few week for television, because you got to have something to fill TV time, a few-week diversion before the bloodline gets back on track. So which one of those scenarios do you think is more likely as the outcome of this Usos Brawling Brutes Undisputed Tag Title match at Crown Jewel?
Well, I think it all has to point towards an eventual match with the New Day to break their record, right? So, as you said at the beginning, the titles don't feel like they're in jeopardy for a number of reasons, including the fact that Holland and Butch don't feel like the strongest, you know, contenders at this point, but also because you just feel that the Usos are either going to, you know, break the record, or they're going to come really close and not, and that might be what pushes Roman over the edge, you know, so to speak, to move the story further along. My guess is that Jimmy and Jey win, but, you know, only because of Sami Zayn or something along those. Oh, Sami Zayn probably won't be there, will he?
No,
not
likely.
Sami Zayn. Not Sami Zayn, but maybe Solo Sikoa. There's got to be something where they win, but in a way that doesn't fully please the tribal chief, because they're not going to just be on the same page after Crown Jewel. That is my thinking. So they retain the titles, or whether by winning or a cheap, they lose the match by DQ or count out or something where they keep the titles, but they'll still be the champs, but it won't be in a way that really ingratiates Jay to Roman, as that storyline is going to continue in some way. I don't know how they continue to stretch it out or where it goes, but that's part of the fun. It's been such a great, yeah. I mean, even without the breaking, to your point, which was so much fun, but it was a really good segment. Like just that moment of I don't care what the tribal chief says, and just ooh from the crowd and the look on Roman's face. It was such a great segment, and you say that week after week after week with what they do. It seems like it's the highlight of, for me, all professional wrestling that I watch. So you're not gonna put that to bed anytime soon. You're gonna find ways of spreading it out and maybe all the way to WrestleMania. Who knows?
Well, that was going to be my next question, because traditionally November is when we start to really see the wheels go in motion for WrestleMania build of the top match or top matches for that show. So do you think, let's say The Rock comes back and faces Roman Reigns at WrestleMania, could this Jey Uso storyline, where he's sort of the straggler amidst the bloodline and he's now openly defying or at least questioning Roman Reigns, is that an opening for The Rock storyline wise to enter in there? I mean, and do you see this being what leads to that, if indeed they go with The Rock at WrestleMania, or could it be something else?
Well, I hadn't thought about that, but it makes a lot of sense. Could Rock come in to try to almost, diffuse some of the tension in the family, so to speak, and then he's not really family, there's a lot of ways you can go with it. I like that idea that you get there through this. I think ultimately the Usos and Roman end up on the same side, and Sammy and Kevin Owens maybe on the same side. I could see an Usos, Kevin Owens, Sammy match at WrestleMania. I've been a proponent that if The Rock's doing Roman Reigns at WrestleMania, I don't want to see The Rock like winning the Royal Rumble or even being in the Royal Rumble. I see you do that like night one, and then you have Roman versus the Rumble winner night two, or you could make that a title match and say, well, Rock or Roman, whoever wins faces, however they do it. But I can definitely see them kind of, like you said, opening the door with this, and you could drop some hints. You're not going to have The Rock coming out in November if he's not going to wrestle till March or April, whenever WrestleMania is. It's going to be closer to that, but you can start to drop some hints and continue on with that long form storytelling.
I've got another question about Sami Zayn that I will wait until we get to the Reigns Logan Paul match to talk about. The next match I want to talk about, though, is Braun Strowman versus Omos, the irresistible force versus the immovable object of 2022. I feel like this is just kind of a stereotypical Saudi Arabia match where, you put two big giants who maybe the crowd isn't used to seeing together, and they're not gonna expect a good match, they're not gonna get a good match, but it's gonna be a spectacle. And I kind of feel like that's what they're going for. So this to me fits into the motif of the Saudi Arabia shows. And really, like, what do you think about Braun Strowman and using him in this role? This is not a prominent role. Do you think if they were going to bring Strowman back that he should have been put in a bigger role right off the bat, or do you think this is a good use of Strowman at this point?
I think at this point it's a good use because with Roman's schedule, with only one champion between the two shows, you know, and obviously there are other top programs that aren't just involved, you know, the world title, but it, you know, there's only so many spots at the top. And so do you want to push Braun up that quickly when he's not going to be the guy to dethrone Roman, or do you want to have him kind of involved in some of this stuff first and get there more eventually? I think it makes some sense. The spectacle, you know, is kind of what you're expecting at this point, like you said, and what else are you going to do with Omos? What are, you know, you kind of have the situation where it seemed like they got rid of Braun because now they had Omos, who's even taller.
Yeah.
And now like it's almost like Braun, you know, in a meta sense, like Braun coming back to reclaim his spot as the guy who's big and impressive physically, but can, you know, he's obviously so far beyond what Omos can do in the ring and on the mic and in other ways. Not that he's not, you know, has his own limitations, but he's so far ahead. And I think has a genuine connection with the fans, and there's a lot of fans who were excited to see him back. So, you know, you do this, you build him up, you keep him strong, you give him a prominent spot, let him eliminate 10 guys in the Rumble. You know, there's a lot of those kind of things you do with a guy like that, and you maybe save that world title match for sometime, you know, next year.
This is expected to be a quick match. I don't think they're going to spend a lot of time out there. If you have Braun Strowman dominate Omos, as some may assume he's going to do, is that really the end of the line for Omos? I mean, what more could you do when Braun Strowman comes in and basically, as you talked about, reclaimed his title as the giant, the monster among monsters, the new tagline, in WWE? Is there still a place for Omos on this roster now that Strowman is back? And as you pointed out, can do the things that make Omos appealing much better than Omos, even if he is slightly shorter.
Right. Yeah, it's a good question, and I don't want to see people lose their jobs, you know, but it's
right.
Kind of like he's just not good enough to me to justify a spot on a roster. It's a limited role because there's always going to be people who look at him and go, well, wait a minute, if he's a 7-foot whatever monster, he's huge, he's strong, nobody seems to can ever beat him, why doesn't he ever get world title matches? He beats 4 guys at a time. Why doesn't he even get a U.S. title match? And that's always the problem with those kind of characters in wrestling. I mean, unless you're actually going to go with them in that kind of position, you kind of question, like you said, well, what's the point of having them, you know, on the roster at that point? My guess is they will not be as one-sided as a match as some people might think. I'm sure Strowman will win, but I'm guessing you'll get some big power moves and big ooh moments with Omos getting to show off some of that stuff so that, and with the brand split, you know, you can have kind of the one guy on Raw and the one guy on SmackDown, and with MVP's ability to talk, he can always,
right,
you know, pump things up afterwards to whatever they do next. The problem is, I don't know what that next thing is.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where Omos and MVP go from here. Who knows, MVP could just cast his lot with Braun Strowman after this one and just leave Omos in the dust. I don't know. Bianca Belair versus Bayley, last woman standing match for the Raw Women's title. I was kind of surprised they went back to Bayley again. I thought that it was a pretty definitive win in the ladder match at Extreme Rules for Bianca Belair. And really, I think Bayley has in some ways disappointed since her return in the ring. I think there's an argument to be made with as much TV time as Damage Control has gotten that maybe their characters are not as defined as they could be, and their mission statement is not as defined as it could be this deep into their run. So, you know, there's that. And I think this will be a good match, but what's been your impression of Bayley and Damage Control since her return?
Yeah, my view has always, well, I don't know, always been, but from close to the start of the group is, oh, I'm really happy to see these three back from either injury or, you know, from being released or whatever, or called up to NXT, from NXT, but they don't go together. Like, I've just never felt that there's a lot of chemistry. There's never felt that there's been a good reason. I mean, you could kind of say this idea, well, Bayley felt that, you know, she needed some backup and she found these two from NXT who weren't getting a chance, but that doesn't really hold up, you know, very well. And I don't know, it just, I'm always happy to see all three of them, you know, on screen. I'm not as down maybe on Bayley's performances individually as others. Certainly don't think they're as good as they had been, but I'm, you know, not that down on them. But again, it's more the sum of the parts is less than the three individuals, if that makes sense. Whatever the, it's the opposite of the old saying, you know. It just, they don't, they're not working together to me. And I want to see, like with the tag team championship, it's okay to build women tag teams, just like you have men tag teams. But it seems like so often, and there have been some definite, I'm having a moment, Greg. Exceptions. There's some definite exceptions to the rule, like the Iconics when they were around. You know, they were clearly a team. But so often it's just like, oh, Raquel Gonzalez found her little buddy Aaliyah, and now they're the tag team.
It's a bit of a hot
match. Right, and hey, don't forget that Sasha Banks and Naomi, they were part of a team 4 years ago that didn't make a lot of sense back then. But don't forget, they're back together, you know, and there's just been that kind of thing. And I feel that way with, you know, Kai and Sky. And it's just like, okay, I like them both individually a lot, but not feeling them as a tag team. So not feeling Bayley as part of the group. It's just been a kind of a mess from that standpoint. But you tend to get good matches because they're all talented.
Yeah. This is the type of match, this last man standing match, where you can have someone lose and there's not that visual pinfall, there's not that submission, so they can save face. I guess my question is then, which way do they go with this? Do they have Belair lose the title and be able to claim that she never really was pinned or submitted for it and, you know, has that claim? Or does Bayley lose again, but in a way that hurts her less than it would if she was pinned or submitted, although she wasn't pinned or submitted last month either at the ladder match, and so that she doesn't lose a lot more momentum either, having lost two major matches in a row? Which direction do you see them going with this?
Yeah, I'm leaning towards Bayley winning right now. I don't have that strong of a feeling, but if I had to bet, that's kind of the way I'm leaning, just because you put this effort into the group, and even if I'm not seeing it, unless they're ready to kind of give up on it, if you want them to be, quote, in control, you kind of have to have Bayley as the champion at some point. And
yeah.
The last woman standing match gives you chance for run-ins and other shenanigans. It gives a Bayley winning, gives a chance for, you know, if you want to continue, it makes more sense. And Bianca becomes, the chaser. And I don't know, I'd have to go back and look, or maybe if you know off the top of your head, you know, have they done a women's title change in Saudi Arabia? It seems like they often like to pat themselves on the back for like the first since the Saudi Arabia shows, the first women's match ever, and then the first women's this or the first women's tag match, the first women's title match. So if they haven't done one, they might want to do one in Saudi Arabia just to be like, it's the first time there's ever been a women's championship, you know, change hands, that kind of thing. I could see that playing into their decision if they haven't done it already, but I don't remember. But that is definitely the way I'm leaning.
Okay. Throwing my pencil around all over the place. We have Drew McIntyre versus Karrion Kross in a steel cage match. This is another, you know, when you hear the stipulation, you just kind of figure this is another attempt by WWE to hide the weaknesses of Karrion Kross. I think it'll be a little more successful maybe than other attempts at it. So I think that, you know, he may surprise here. I think the steel cage is possibly a good way for him to not have the kind of down match that really did him in when it came to being NXT champion and really exposed him on that brand. So do you have that same confidence about Kross in this type of match, or do you think it's going to be more confirmation that Kross just is not the guy in this role, in this prominent role on SmackDown?
Yeah, I think part of the issue, just real quick, is when you have an Extreme Rules pay-per-view that every match has to have a stipulation, so the first match between these guys is a strap match. You can't just go to another regular match. So it's like, well, and it makes some sense. I give them credit. There is some storyline because trying to keep Scarlett out of the match. So you go to the steel cage. So give them credit for actually building, you know, the story purpose to the step. But to your point, it also, from a behind-the-scenes standpoint, you know, as you said, hide some of the weaknesses of Kross, because when you get down to it, just, you know, a regular wrestling match with him doesn't necessarily have a lot of appeal to me and to a lot of fans, where we've seen that kind of, you know, those matches just be, you know, I'm not saying they're terrible or anything, but they're not that, you know, you don't expect a four-star match or, you know, anything like that. It's
right.
Just not his kind of forte as a wrestler. So, but brawling, using those shortcuts that you get with a cage, I mean, Scarlett's going to get in there. She'll find a way, or to hand him, you know, I can see, like, handcuffs coming into play. You know, that kind of thing,
right,
where they, oh, you know, it's built to keep her out, but she still finds a way to, you know, get involved.
Of course.
So, you know, there's going to be shenanigans. There's going to be bells and whistles to hide his deficiencies. And also, just because, despite what I said a moment ago about praising them for having a good reason to have the match with that stipulation, that doesn't mean that they're disciplined enough to not kill the stipulation during the match itself.
Agreed. All right, let's go to the phone for our first call of the evening. It is Ryan from Cumberland, Maryland. Ryan, welcome to Wrestling Night in America tonight. What's the first of your three-pack of questions for us?
I have a question on this stuff. Rollins, somebody said a couple weeks ago, saying that he's the greatest United States champion of all time. Do you possibly see him doing like a Chris Jericho gimmick that he's doing in Ring of Honor or AEW, where he says he's going to defeat as many as the past champions, and maybe it could like even lead to a match at WrestleMania with Steve Austin, since he was a U.S. champion and WrestleMania has 100,000 tickets to sell. And I think Seth Rollins might be able to provide a lot better movement than Kevin Owens in a match.
Yeah, I mean, the Kevin Owens, the nice thing about that was it was a brawl. So it's not like it was a match like you would have if you're doing Austin versus Seth Rollins. You're probably going to do, if it's, you know, United States title or something like that, you're probably going to do a regular match, which, yeah, you're going to want someone to probably create a little more movement for Austin there. You know, I do wonder, like, Austin showed he had that match in him, but would he want to try it again? Would he really want to test himself again, knowing how well-received that match was and everything like that? I just don't know. But to the larger point, John, of Rollins, you know, taking on former U.S. champions. There are enough former U.S. champions in WWE on Raw or SmackDown. And with the brand split the way it is, which is very loose at this point, you could easily have wrestlers from SmackDown come over to Raw or vice versa, or have Rollins go to SmackDown to fight them. So it's entirely possible. I don't get a feel yet for where this Seth Rollins' United States Champion storyline is going to go. I think sooner rather than later, he's going to tie up with Bobby Lashley again once Lashley is done with Brock Lesnar. I can't see that feud lasting beyond, beyond Crown Jewel. I don't know. Maybe they have Lesnar come back for Survivor Series. That's another big show that's got the War Games on it. So they may want to use Lesnar on that one, but... what do you think about Ryan's proposal about Seth Rollins and his U.S. title run?
I mean, in general, I like the concept of, the former, taking on former champions, trying to prove you're the best by beating all the former champions. I like that concept. But as he also pointed out in the question, it's so similar to what Jericho is doing right now with the ROH title. I don't know that they're going to want to draw those comparisons. I also have a feeling that Rollins' reign will be done long before WrestleMania. And the reason I'm saying that is because they're really going to be pounding how long Roman has been the world champion at WrestleMania. And I don't think they're going to want other people with, 6-7 month reigns going into that, just for a contrast. I think they're going to want to really make Roman's title reign and the length and the grandeur of it stand out in a way that, presumably if somebody actually beats him for the title at WrestleMania, you want that moment to be such a big star-making moment that I don't think they want to, take away by going, Cody's been the champion for, 7 or 8 months at that point. So, I like the idea, but again, I would not bet on it lasting to WrestleMania with or without Austin's, involvement.
All right, Ryan, your second question for us tonight.
Second question is, I don't know if you caught this last week, AJ Styles name-dropped James Ellsworth in a promo, and even Booker T name-dropped the Rock and Roll Express. And my question is, when a wrestler on a promo or an announcer name drops a wrestler that isn't in the company, does that greatly increase the chances they could show up for a cameo in the near future?
Sometimes. I think in the James Ellsworth scenario, it's not as likely, especially with the blowback that he's gotten from the Me Too complaints about him. So I think that's more just to kind of make a joke. I know that, John, we like to read into, especially now where the floodgates are open for the announcers, to talk about all these different wrestlers who would never get talked about. Michael Cole mentioned Paige on SmackDown, who is now under AEW contract. So the restrictions have loosened quite a bit. So I think you're going to hear a lot more references to wrestlers who may not have normally gotten referenced. We're hearing organizations, independent organizations that would never have gotten mentioned under Vince McMahon. So I would be careful about getting our hopes up to see any of these people that are mentioned in these promos, Sean.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. But your ears perk up every time you hear one. And you go, oh, is that going to be a sign of things to come or whatever? But, yeah, there's, obviously, like you said, Paige isn't going to show up. So it's could just be you almost have to look at each one individually. And as you said, Ellsworth was clearly just a joke. I guess they could bring him back and – he could be back on tomorrow night for some kind of Halloween gimmick thing where he's dressed up as a trick-or-treater. I mean, God only knows, so you can't rule it out. But at the same time, I wouldn't read too much into it.
All right, Ryan, your third and final question for us tonight.
Final question is, I believe it was Game Changer Wrestling that had some sort of relationship with WWE, or they're trying to work on one. If they were going to have one wrestler from each organization try their hand in each promotion, who would the one wrestler from WWE and one wrestler from Game Changer that would be a good fit for a switch?
Yeah, I don't know how true that news is about GCW and WWE having any kind of relationship. I know that Joey Janela has played it up a lot on social media, and I think that's just kind of for laughs at this point. But, you know, I don't know enough about GCW to comment on that, and I know they don't have a ton of wrestlers under contract, I don't think. I think it's more like a true independent promotion where a lot of guys come and go. So somebody that you might mention as a quote-unquote GCW wrestler may not, you know, really be a GCW wrestler. I think of somebody like, I don't know, the first name that comes into my head is Nick Wayne, who I think has done some work for GCW. And he's the son of Buddy Wayne. He's wrestled out in the Pacific Northwest. But a lot of people talking him up quite a bit. So he's still very young. I think he's still in his teens. But you know, that would be interesting to see him. You know, it's almost like trying to take someone from WWE and moving them to ECW back in the day. There are some similarities there. But you know, I think of someone like Roman Reigns. What kind of reaction would he get in GCW, similar to what kind of top guy you might take from WWE at the time and move them to ECW? So, you know, I know GCW is a lot more of the hardcore stuff. I think of someone like Kevin Owens maybe fitting in there a little bit. I don't know. But John, I don't know how closely you follow GCW, but do you have any thoughts about some movement back and forth there?
I don't follow it closely at all, but it's funny because literally Kevin Owens was the first name that popped into my head with just the little bit that I know, and I've seen a few clips here and there, but I certainly can't comment on the other way around because I don't, you know, follow it or know. You know, every once in a while I'll hear, like, where, was it Zack Ryder, the former Zack Ryder showed up for a while, I think, mm-hmm. And I know Moxley's been there, and recently I think did he lose a title match or something, but I'm just kind of following on the periphery, so unfortunately I can't, you know, talk to it too much. But yeah, for whatever reason, Kevin Owens, and that was my line of thinking, was with what little I know of it, if it were like ECW, who would I send to ECW if it was still around? And Owens was the first name that popped into my head without giving it a lot of thought.
Yeah. All right, Ryan, thanks for the call this week.
Okay, thanks for taking it.
Absolutely. All right, back to Crown Jewel here, John. We'll finish up with the top three matches. Brock Lesnar versus Bobby Lashley, mentioned briefly about the Lesnar appearance sort of came out of nowhere. I think that was a question a lot of people had about Triple H. Would he be as willing to go to that Brock Lesnar well as Vince McMahon did? Obviously, Vince and Lesnar had a really good relationship. We didn't really know what kind of relationship in terms of business relationship that Triple H would have with Brock Lesnar, but bringing Brock Lesnar back apparently is a heel, it looks like. I'm not sure about that, but what did you think about the decision to bring Brock Lesnar back? I mean, it seems to me to be a Saudi Arabia-based decision more than anything else.
Oh, 100%, yeah. And it's hard to know behind the scenes, but like SummerSlam wasn't that the first real big show that Triple H was running on, you know, after McMahon had resigned or retired, whatever. So, you know, that Lesnar-Reigns match, as crazy as it was and all the bells, talked about bells and whistles, it was really well received, you know, my recollection, and the people I know and who are watching, you know, really enjoyed it and the spectacle of it all. And I think a lot of people had really been enjoying, you know, Cowboy Lesnar, and seeing him actually getting to talk every once in a while without Paul Heyman has been kind of fun. And so I could see, like, regardless of how Triple H felt, you know, personally or whatever, what kind of relationship they had. And obviously there were the stories that, you know, Lesnar was going to walk out and didn't want to work with them after McMahon was going to be leaving. And obviously they they got all that worked out, and if Triple H has, you know, learned something from McMahon, it might be not to hold grudges, as McMahon seemed like he would bring just about anyone back if he thought he could make money.
Mm-hmm.
And if the Saudi Arabia deal is such, I'm guessing that, you know, there's certain expectations on WWE to have both kind of legendary people. We've seen Shawn Michaels and Undertaker, et cetera, et cetera. So it's not surprising they would bring Lesnar back for this kind of match. I was disappointed in going to the Lashley, how that happened, because, again, I want to root for Lesnar, and I want to root for Lashley. So I'm not thrilled that they're kind of asking me to choose one or the other. I really felt like they could have done more with Lashley and his U.S. title reign. I thought the last few months of it were just kind of lost, and they just didn't really have anything for him. And then all of a sudden, oh, they're building something with Rollins. That's exciting. That's new. That's different. Yeah, they're going to have a program. And then it was like, oh, wait, he just got beat up by Lesnar and lost the title, and now he's not, you know, not that they won't go back to it. But, yeah, the whole thing has just been kind of disappointing to me from the use of Lashley losing the title to the, you know, are we supposed to boo Lesnar now when we were just cheering him against Reigns? So are we supposed to boo him now but cheer him at the Royal Rumble? You know, it's kind of – and I get there's a certain, like, Lesnar's Lesnar, and he's just going to be himself and let him face whoever. And that's okay. You can do babyface with Lesnar, but that's not how they presented it. You know, then get there without him jumping, you know, Lashley or whatever and costing him the title match. You know, you can do that.
Right.
But it's certainly not what they are doing or what they have done so far.
Yeah, it's interesting with bringing Lesnar back. Like you said, it does seem like a Saudi Arabia business decision type thing. So we'll have to see. I can't imagine Lesnar losing to Lashley here. But I don't know. I could see it going to... And I talked about this a little bit before, talking about Rollins, is I could see it going from Lashley-Lesnar back to Lashley-Rollins. Rollins doesn't have a match here on this show, at least as of yet. Still, we're on SmackDown this week to go before we get there. We have the OC, Styles, Gallows, and Anderson, taking on Balor, Priest, and Dominic Mysterio of the Judgment Day. What do you think about the decision to bring Gallows and Anderson back into the fold?
I mean, I'm one of those people who felt that and I don't think I'm, you know, in the minority here, the amount of roster cuts the WWE did over the last few years, it has just been stunning. And the depth on all three brands, and by, you know, NXT just going from this kind of combo thing where you had the people like, you know, Adam Cole and O'Reilly and some of those veterans mixed with the younger people, to just suddenly being all really green wrestlers and Roderick Strong, and then Raw and SmackDown going from, you know, this kind of depth to being like, okay, there's, you know, a handful of people, and then the women's division, the tag team division. So when it comes to that, like, hey, I'm all for bringing people back who can contribute and just add depth. That doesn't mean I'm all for everyone coming back who got released, because some of them, you know, probably weren't good enough to be around in the first place. But, you know, they have some name recognition. They have certainly a history with AJ Styles and Finn Balor where you can play off of it going in this current feud and then moving forward in other ways. They can just add another tag team, you know, at some point to face the Usos or whatever. So, you know, from that standpoint, I'm fine with it. I'm not, like, the biggest, you know, fan in the world, but it can certainly be, you know, good in the short term with this Judgment Day. And then, as I said, just adding tag team depth, which was sorely needed.
Yeah, I think that's their biggest value. And I think, you know, Styles, I think that raises his profile, and I think he feels more important being sort of the leader of the club and having Anderson and Gallows there alongside him to play off of, I think it makes Styles feel like a bigger deal. And that's a good thing. I'm a huge AJ Styles fan. So to make him feel like a bigger deal and not just a random mid-carder who's having 15-minute matches on Raw each and every week. So to me, I think that's an advantage as well. Not only does it help to have Anderson Gallows around to add depth to prolong this Judgment Day AJ Styles feud, but I think it does help Styles too, being able to be seen as a leader by fans.
Mm-hmm. Now let me ask you this, Greg. Do you think bringing back the conversation from a few minutes ago about some of these names that they said, I think they've dropped PWG at one point, and some names of wrestlers or whatever. The news, I think, came out today that Shinsuke Nakamura is going to be allowed to be part of Great Muda's retirement tour, and it was a Pro Wrestling Noah, I think it was. Do we hear the words Bullet Club on WWE programming at some point? Because it's driving me crazy where you just get, like, these veiled references. Well, I started this group back in the day, and everybody who's come after me has, been terrible. And, well, we're still part of it because we're the OC club. You know, it's just like, can you
Yeah, I don't know if there's, like, a trademark issue there that kind of prevents them from from talking in depth about it. And I think, because that is part of the storyline, I think it would be awkward to just drop it in there once and not be able to refer to it ever again, because I you can't use it certainly to make money off of or anything like that.
True.
So I think they just continue with the vague references, the club, the OC, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
I think they're probably going to have to continue to do that. Just because it is such a central part of this storyline, if it was something that they were just dropping in there once, I think they may be able to get away with it, but because they're building a storyline around it, I don't think they can really do it. It reminds me kind of TNA when they did the ECW tribute show, the Hardcore Justice, and they couldn't even say ECW. They couldn't build the show around it because they didn't own the trademark for it. But if they, if they had said, "Wow, these guys wrestled in ECW," I think that would have been okay, but when you're building a show around it, you can't just say it once and not. So then you have to decide, are we gonna do this? Because we'll have to say it not at all if we're going to do it. So
that's
I think that's part
point,
of the issue
yeah.
as well.
I wish they would just maybe also just define it a little better, even without saying the name. I mean, they've referenced New Japan, before. But just, do a little something, I think, to say, like, When Finn Balor was, part of New Japan Pro Wrestling, or even just in Japan, when he was wrestling in Japan, he started, this organization that was really successful, and then, AJ Styles took it over, and there's this long, just do a little bit, I think, more for some of the casual fans who don't, know the history, or who are just kind of like, if they were part of that club, are they still part of that club, but they're not part of, it's just kind of almost
and
like...
What kind of club calls themselves the club? That's the most boring name for an
organization.
I mean, come on.
Right. So I think they could do a little bit more even without using, the name if they can't get away with it. Or like you said, they might be able to say it, but you don't want to say it a lot. So why say it at all, which makes perfect sense.
Sure. And in the presumed main event, Roman Reigns versus Logan Paul, WWE Undisputed Championship match, I don't think there's any doubt that Roman Reigns walks out of this as champion. But what do you expect out of Logan Paul in this match? Are they going to, Logan Paul has been training for this. We've seen him in the ring before in a couple matches. He's good for his level of experience, probably better than good for his level of experience. But is this going to be a match where Logan Paul really shows that? Or is this going to be more of a kind of brawl, pseudo boxing match? What are you expecting from bell to bell in this one?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not sure. I think they've really been building this match around the idea of the one lucky shot. And so from that standpoint, it almost seems like it's going to be heavily dominated by Roman, almost toying with him, and I can see Heyman pleading with him to take Logan more seriously. I see a lot of that kind of stuff, you know, just finish him, my tribal chief, you know, because he is, you know, worried that he's taking Logan more seriously than Roman is. As Roman said on SmackDown this week, he's only had two matches, you know, he's not taking him seriously at all. So I think you're going to see a lot of that dominating with those hope spots from Logan, catching Reigns off guard here and there. And then again, he'll probably hit one big punch at some point on Roman, but he won't be able to make the cover because he'll be too tired. He'll be worn down. And by the time he does, Roman gets that, you know, last millisecond kick out. And then, you know, shortly thereafter hits a spear and gets the win, and they'll talk about, because you can come out with it, you know, Paul saying, hey, in my third match, I came this close to beating the guy who has been the champion for whatever it is, 2 years, whatever it is, however long it's been at this point. So,
what
you
is
know,
time
you,
anyway at this point?
Yeah. So I that's how I see it going, and not so much a chance for Paul to show off his, as you said, better than expected, you know, kind of wrestling ability, but just more telling that story of that one lucky shot.
Excellent. All right, well, that is Crown Jewel as we sit here today. Crown Jewel next Saturday from Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. Zach Haydorn will be back with you. WNIALivecast@gmail.com is where you can send your emails. He'll be back Wrestling Night in America next Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, on PWTorchDailyCast.com, sitting in for me. I'll be out of town and won't be available for that show. But I'm sure that we'll talk about the fallout when I get back. I'm sure that will be on the menu to discuss. Let's go back to the phones, 305 area code. DJ from Miami. DJ, welcome back to Wrestling Night in America. What's on your mind tonight?
Hey, guys. We got a couple things. I guess we can start with the Punk thing. Now that I feel like now that Punk is gone, I feel like they really need a better babyface than Moxley. No babyfaces, I want to suck your blood and eat your bones or whatever he said. That's not a babyface. That's more like a heelish slash blah, blah, blah. I want a real babyface coming in, you know, like Wardlow, but they really, you know, make him cold. But in general, where do you see them maybe 6 months from now? Do you think they'll come up with a new babyface to fight the Elite, to fight MJF? Or do you think that it's going to be the same circle over and over with Moxley or Danielson? Or where do y'all see this in, hopefully soon with a brand new babyface?
Well, I will say that I don't see Moxley as a problematic babyface in the same way you do, DJ. I think that he is shown a lot of babyface and leadership tendencies on television, which is, I think, what you want out of AEW right now. You know, you talk about baby faces, Bryan Danielson is there, but he's sort of mired in the Blackpool Combat Club, and I think it's hard for him to break out beyond that and above that right now to where you'd want a top baby face to be. You know, Hangman Page is always there. I don't know if he has what it takes, unfortunately, to truly be the top baby face of the brand. I mean, he's been unlucky a couple different times, certainly with the injury suffered in the match with Moxley. There's some unluckiness there. But, you know, if we're talking 6 months down the line, John, it might be MJF. I mean, he might be the top babyface depending on the direction that AEW wants to go in and how willing they are to let the crowd dictate direction they go in.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I'm kind of with you, Greg. Like, I don't have an issue with Moxley, but, you know, to each their own. I see Moxley as more of a babyface than Bryan Danielson, at this point. Just a lot of what he does just doesn't come across as likable to me. And, you know, Heyman Page certainly popped to mind also. Another thing, we don't really know what their plan is with the Elite. I'm not convinced they're necessarily going to come back as heels because, you could see them, you know, Cody's gone, Punk's gone. It's almost like you could go the route of Kenny. You know, Kenny was a babyface at first, but was kind of just not really used as like that top star that a lot of people were expecting out of the gate when AEW first started. And once he became that champion, it was because he turned heel. And we haven't really gotten a Kenny Omega run at the top as a babyface. And why not? Because you can, whether you mention Punk by name, probably not, but you know, people know. People know what's going on. And you can really play him up as, you know, the sympathetic character in that. Like, look, I've been here from the start. I helped found this thing. I'm, you know, the new Cody Rhodes without all the bad decisions that they made with Cody that got him booed. You know, you can really push Omega. So I could see that MJF is destined to be a babyface, and, you know, you have to at some point, you know, stop fighting the tide, right? You can't just my thinking and concern is, you know, you do something screwy with another cheating, somehow he wins the title at Full Gear, whatever, I think it's Full Gear, the next pay-per-view.
Yeah.
You know, and you get that screwy thing where, oh, we, you know, some kind of swerve where you think they're going to go with MJF as the babyface. Nah, ha, ha, I screwed you over again. I just, it's so, like, lame at this point. Like, I don't really want to see that. I'm worried that that's the direction they're going to go in. I'd rather just say, hey, you know, I mean, WWE had that years ago with The Rock. Everybody was getting behind The Rock. But they still had Austin at the top, and it was like, we're not ready to go with Rock, so, you know, you do the whole Survivor Series swerve thing. And here we were, you know, 3 or 4 months later, you go Austin Rock at WrestleMania with Rock as a bad guy, but still super popular, and it was like, after that, they're like, okay, we can't keep fighting this anymore. We got to go with The Rock. And we've got Austin, too. And I just think at some point you can't just keep having him come out there and make fun of the local sports teams and, you know, do all this other stuff to get cheap heat when everybody just wants to cheer for him.
And I think you made an important point about the Elite potentially coming back as babyfaces. You know, much of the AEW audience is probably going to know the situation, and I don't know how much they're going to be able to play that up on TV, but the Elite could easily make the argument that they were defending AEW. And doing
right.
what they did. You know, CM Punk, an outsider, came in, talked down about their stars in a very public way, made their boss, Tony Khan, look bad for having to sit there and listen to that, and, you know, made fun of us, you know. And so we did what we did to defend AEW. And,
right.
you know, we're you know, you could make that argument to babyface them. Upon their return, which, again, depending on how much they can talk about. DJ, back to you.
Can I just add one thing, though? I just wish they would just have a homegrown babyface because it is a brand-new company. You know what I'm saying? They're, you know, I just wish that, you know, like Wardlow or somebody upcoming, you know? It sucks that they buried all these guys, you know? It makes me upset, like, you know, all these guys, you know? Just so... Hopefully we'll see in the future that they'll bring these guys back, you know.
Well, would you consider
yeah.
Omega a homegrown or not because of his time in Japan?
Nope. I'm talking about like Jungle Boy or Brian or Brian's what's his name son, like that homegrown up and coming babyface, somebody who they never seen, Wardlow.
Yeah,
like that. Not somebody who's people have seen before.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder how much that matters, though. Like, I'm watching AEW for the I'm watching AEW for the best guys. And if the best guy is Bryan Danielson as a babyface, or the best guy is Jon Moxley, that's what I care about. I don't necessarily care about them trying to push a homegrown star just to say they pushed a homegrown star. Like. That takes time, and I guess I know it's been more than 2 years now, but you know, John Moxley is very different than he was as Dean Ambrose in WWE. And so even though he's not homegrown, this character feels homegrown in AEW. And I would say that about some of the other wrestlers who've come from other places as well. So, you know, John, maybe you can speak to that too. Like, how much do you care about seeing someone that like a Jungle Boy or like a Wheeler Yuta or a Daniel Garcia, those that are perceived as being homegrown within AEW, how much does it matter to see them succeed at a very high level versus just seeing guys who are really good, regardless of where they came from?
Well, I'll throw another name, Darby Allin, in. I think he fits in that standpoint and seemed like at one point had a lot more momentum, to DJ's point, I think, than he does now. I'm kind of probably somewhere in between because it doesn't matter as much to me, but I'm also thinking back to, like, TNA days when they would get, you know, a Christian Cage or a Kurt Angle and then later on, you know, Kevin Nash and Booker T and all those. And it was just kind of like, okay, yeah, these guys were big stars, but, what about Christopher Daniels? What about AJ Styles? What about, you know, so-and-so? What about James Storm, you know? So I'm kind of in that middle ground where I'm like, yeah, I don't mind seeing somebody who deserves it being on top regardless of the background. But, yeah, I like to see I would rather the default be, hey, we're going to try to really push and make new stars than relying on somebody who just comes in with some name recognition. But at the same time, if that person can still wrestle, and this is, I think, where maybe a difference than what TNA did, where a lot of those guys were coming in kind of at the end of their careers, where, you know, they had name recognition but not necessarily as much talent. You know, if Moxley's having great matches, you know, or whoever is having great matches, Omega or whoever, it doesn't matter as much to me that they're not homegrown. But I think as someone who started watching from the beginning, you know, to see, well, you know, what are they doing with Darby Allin? What are they doing with, you know, is Sammy going to be feuding with, you know, Christian for the next, you know, 9 months while he recovers because he's hurt now and they can't have the blow-off match. It's just kind of, is he going to just be stalled in that point? I'm kind of somewhere in that middle ground, I guess.
All right, Tito, go back to you for your I think I stole your second question. That wasn't really a question, so I'll give you an extra one. Your second question for us tonight.
Yeah, my second thing is going to WWE real fast. I don't know if you guys are into this, but I don't know what Triple H is doing. It's just, I don't know. With these announcers, it's like EAW, it's like the guy on Raw, he's so nice. And the other guy, you know, he's like more of a jerkish, like heelish. And the other guy's so nice with this accent. And I don't like that. I like somebody who can talk to and banter with the other guy. And then going into SmackDown, it's the same way. It's like Michael Cole's yelling and this guy is he's chum, chill, whatever, talking. I don't, you know, it's not, they don't, it's like oil and water. They don't. You know, they don't banter. So it's like EAW. They have Sockface and JR and everybody. But you know what? Rick Abani was awesome the other night, and I wish he would be full-time on that. He would do great with Sockface and, you know, every once in a while, Tony can, you know, pipe up because JR's leaving, and they need somebody who will run and who can, you know, run with the ball with this. And I don't see both announce teams were really working out with this.
I assume Sockface is Excalibur, I guess, regardless. I liked Wade Barrett on SmackDown. You know, it does take a little time to get the chemistry right. I think that's something that you do have to give a little time to. But I think mostly what you're talking about is what WWE wants, and they want that difference in announcers. They want if you know, Cole is going to be screaming and hyper and yelling about things, Wade Barrett offsets him. I certainly don't want two guys screaming at me from the announce desk or anything like that. So I think that may be purposeful as much as it's even acknowledged that the announcers are quite different. Kevin Patrick does seem very nice, and I will never call that a detriment. I think that is a good trait to have, actually, because you want the announcer to be trusted by the audience. And that was the biggest complaint of the Michael Cole, heel Michael Cole era, was, you know, you've got your voice of WWE who's trying to sell you on what's going on and trying to sell you on buying the pay-per-view and everything like that. And in one segment, he's a heel, and another segment, he's like the straight man. And it didn't make any sense. So if the lead announcer is seen as nice, I think that's a net win for WWE because that's a trustworthy voice that people can count on and believe when they say something. And I think that's important to have that relationship with the audience. What's been your impression of the new announce team so far, John?
Yeah, as a general rule, I've not been a fan of wrestling announcing over the past, I don't know how long, other than my guilty pleasure, Pat McAfee on SmackDown, who just brings energy and brings an enthusiasm and a genuine feeling, you know, to what he did. So I think he's missed, and I'll look forward to him presumably coming back after the college football season is over. But I think it's, you know, a little too early to tell with the new announced teams. Part of my issue is I'm just kind of over the heel color commentator. And part of the problem is that we've had supposed babyface commentators, and Booker T is probably the worst offender, you know, constantly congratulating the heels for cheating. And it's like, you know, there's no pushback from the babyface announcers. So, and for a long time on Raw, you had Byron Saxton and Corey Graves, who were supposed to be this kind of dueling pair, but Corey Graves is such an alpha, and Byron Saxton is so not an alpha that he just felt weak and like he couldn't really push back. And so I would much rather see there was a time when they would do on AEW, it was kind of like Excalibur, Jim Ross, and Tony Schiavone. And it was a little weird because it was like three play-by-play guys and no color commentator. And it didn't always work out. But at least, like, they weren't arguing with each other. They weren't, you know, bickering and then, you know, kissing up to the heels and saying, oh, well, whatever it takes to win. I've found a lot of the announcing on both shows problematic. I found Chris Jericho, when he does it, like he was a babyface. There was a stretch, you know, in between his heel turns when he was a babyface. But if you watched him on Rampage when he do color commentary, it was like he was the heel commentator. It didn't fit with his personality. And I felt like then Taz, who was like a heel with his group, was trying to be like the babyface commentator. It didn't make sense. So I think, you know, it's all over the place. And the personalities, like you said, if you have one that's more hyped up and one that's more subdued, that's fine. That's good. You can have that kind of, you know, personality differences. So for me, my more bigger concern is just more the heel-face dynamic that I'm just kind of over at this point and want to see more sports-like, you know, analysis and less sports entertainment. Corey Graves has to, you know, kiss JBL's butt, you know, that kind of thing.
All right, DJ, your third and final question for us tonight.
Yep. My third one is just going in, it's just like the first one. It's like, oh God, I don't know what they're doing with babyfaces in WWE, the same thing. It's like, I love Bobby, but Bobby was definitely a great heel, okay? It's like, where are the homegrown babyfaces? It's like, I understand Cody's coming back. He's hurt, okay. But there are other guys who can work as heels, but they want to put them as babyfaces. It doesn't work like that. You know what I'm saying? Babyfaces are definitely, you know how it is, like how they talk, how they act, how they blah, blah, blah. You know? So I feel like or who do you feel like in this roster would be the better babyface to come up against Roman Reigns? Because I'm sick of Roman just having both belts. Like we talked before, it's not fair that, you know, Raw doesn't have a belt. But who would you pick? Because no, Cody's hurt, but as a babyface that would take on Roman and take as the babyface role, because we don't have one right now, I feel like.
Well, this is what I was going to talk about, John, when I mentioned Sami Zayn earlier. And, you know, there is a growing momentum online for potentially Sami Zayn to be the babyface that unseats Roman Reigns. How likely do you think that is? And do you think that would be a good move? Because there doesn't seem to be, I guess Cody Rhodes is the only one, but beyond him, there doesn't seem to be any obvious candidates to eventually beat Roman Reigns, and who knows when that's going to be. But should Sami Zayn be in that conversation?
I know if I can.
Well, I think, yeah, Sami, it's kind of like what I was saying a minute ago. You don't want to fight the tide. So, you know, Sami's got this momentum. He's got so much going behind him. But that doesn't mean necessarily they're going to get behind him going all the way, because maybe he gets that match and, you know, ultimately, you know, falls a little short. In general, I think Kevin Owens is another name that, you know, and he's, I guess, hurt right now also. But Owens is really good at whatever he does. You know, like, put him as a heel, put him as a babyface, he'll be able to cut a promo that makes fans want to cheer him, makes fans want to boo him, and then he's going to have a good match. So, I mean, I would love to see, you know, Owens, healthy Owens as a top baby face, because I think fans really want to see that. They had something going with Matt Riddle, and I don't know what happened. I don't know if they just, I mean, it's not Vince McMahon anymore, but it seems like the shiny new toy, like, syndrome, where they had something with him with Orton, and then once Orton got hurt, they seemed like they were actually building something with Riddle, in terms of, like, that, you know, balance between the goofy stoner character and a little bit more, you know, of the Randy Orton influenced character. And I thought they were doing a real good job, and now he's just playing bongos with Elias, and it's just like, well, he certainly doesn't seem anywhere close to that challenger now. And, yeah, you know, like we talked about Braun Strowman, you know, certainly could get a push, but I don't see him getting, like, a sustained push. I think that's part of it. You're going to get these guys who come and go, and that's kind of like the opposite of, like, the Hulk Hogan kind of model, where you would build up heels for these short little programs with Hogan as the champion. Now it's, you know, building up, you know, baby faces short term as champions. We haven't talked about Bray Wyatt. As you know, I read this week there's some rumors that supposedly they want to push him into a main event program pretty, you know, sooner than later. That's the phrase I'm looking for. That doesn't get me excited, but it might get a lot of other people excited. But again, I don't necessarily see him as a kind of classic babyface either. So it's hard to know, you know, what the answer is.
All right, DJ, thanks for the phone call tonight. We'll talk to you again soon.
Chase, real fast. I just wish,
yep,
it won't work though. Austin Fury as a babyface, but he's such a great heel, he can't do it. If he wasn't such a great heel, he would be such a great babyface.
Yeah. No, I think that's fair. And we, you know, we really haven't seen it since, you know, he's been a heel for most of his run. But he kind of has that look that he could be a good baby face. I mean, what do you think about the potential of Theory as a baby face, John?
I think it's there, but yeah, not now. You've got to, you know, let him kind of prove himself as that heel for a good amount of time. I'm in general, other than, I mean, there's always exceptions. You know, you're not going to call up Rey Mysterio in 1995 and make him a heel because he's got to prove himself, you know, when you see what he can do in the ring. But a lot of times I feel that way a little bit. Like, a lot of wrestlers, you know, you can't push them too quickly as baby faces for fear that the fans will reject them. The fans will see them as, you know, WWE's choice, Vince McMahon's choice, Triple H's choice, not our choice. And that's, I think, what would happen if they tried to suddenly switch theory now or even within the next year, is that it would feel premature and, you know, let him, you know, be a heel. And he has a lot of potential, but he still has a lot of room for growth, too. And so you let him keep growing and, you know, he'll get there eventually. Let's, you know, and then we can see where does he land ultimately long-term, babyface or heel.
All right, DJ, thanks for the phone call.
See you guys next week. Thanks.
Yep. All right, we'll wrap up with a couple things here. New Japan had their Rumble on 44th Street in New York City on Friday night. The main event, Jay White and Juice Robinson defeating Okada and Eddie Kingston. I haven't seen that one yet. I do want to see it, but I have not seen it yet, so I don't want to say too much more about it. DJ actually touched on the other thing I wanted to talk about, which was the Elite. They have not returned yet, but there was a vignette that seemed to signal their impending return on AEW TV this past week. What did you make of the vignette, and, you know, where do you think how much can they really acknowledge what happened? Because they have not talked about it on TV. Tony Khan went out of his way to not speak about what Punk was being stripped of the title for or what the title was being held up for. You know, maybe that legal stuff is behind them now and maybe they can be a little more out in the open about it. But how do you see them fitting in? Do you see them, you know, Full Gear is coming up just a few weeks. Do you think they come back before Full Gear, or do you think they wait for the booking cycle to kind of finish up at Full Gear and then maybe return on the Dynamite after, or maybe even at Full Gear?
My gut is saying at, just thinking in terms of you could certainly announce it ahead of time and try to pop a buy rating. I mean, that's kind of the good business deal, right? You could also not announce it specifically, but make it all but clear. I'm trying to think. They kind of
You got to remember too. This is a company that debuted Adam Cole and Bryan Danielson in the same pay-per-view segment, so they're not against surprise debuts or returns on pay-per-view.
Right, but there were. My recollection, Greg, is that there were pretty strong feelings that one or both of those guys were going to be on at some point soon. And so I think there was a lot of that. And so, again, you don't have to, you know, necessarily announce, hey, Kenny Omega makes his, you know, long-awaited return, or the Elite make their long-awaited return at Full Gear. But if you drop enough hints and with these vignettes, the video we saw this week is just the first, you know. So you get a series of videos that strongly suggest it with or without announcing it, you can, you know, probably doesn't matter. Enough people will be intrigued enough to buy it, to see them return just to see what they do. And I'm guessing, I don't know enough, but I'm guessing with legal proceedings still going and whatever's going on with Punk's contract and trying to get the release and all of that stuff, the details, the no-compete, et cetera, et cetera, I'm guessing they're not going to be able to, you know, say much, if anything, about it. But
that's
going to
be really strange, isn't
knows.
It? Like, how do you bring such big stars back when they were absent for so long and not acknowledge why they were gone? I mean, you can't make up a reason. I mean, too many people know what happened to just make up a reason and lie. So, I mean, how do you thread that needle?
Oh, that's a good question. They don't pay me enough to to give him what I would do. I think you can talk about, you know, you can talk about, was it all? I always forget if it's all in or all out. Because I know it started with one and then it went to the other, but I always forget which was which. But you can talk about it in general. You can say, hey, we all know what happened after, you know, All Out went off the air, and, you know, because that's not saying anything. That's just saying, that's acknowledging something happened, you know, you can say stuff like, we've served our time, you know, now, you know, we're back. But I don't know. It's obviously an unenviable situation. The whole thing has been so unfortunate. I mean, you've got people supposedly hurting dogs, other people saying, no, dogs were hurt, and my wife was threatened, and that's why I started biting somebody. I mean, it's just been, it's like, what? It's like you said at the beginning, like, we don't see wrestlers break the way we saw the bloodline breaking. Well, you hear about, you know, back in the day, Austin and Shawn Michaels, or not Austin, Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels get in a fight, and they do some suspensions and everything else. But in, you know, Draymond Green punched Jordan Poole in a practice, and a lot of people said, this is stuff that happens, you know, Michael Jordan punched Steve Kerr back in the day, and, you know, Shaquille O'Neal said, you know how many people I punched, this and that? Yeah, but it wasn't in the age of, you know, social media. It wasn't in the age. Yeah. There wasn't video of it.
You could hide it better.
Exactly. So it's just, even if stuff like this happened, I don't know that it happened very often to the degree that this happened. I mean, even if guys got in fights and shoving and this and that, which is going to happen from time to time, unfortunately, but not to this level where you get your world champion. And obviously he was hurt in the match, but that really doesn't matter. If, even if he hadn't been hurt, you would have had to done something. And with, again, the media scrum, it's not like it started behind the scenes. It started on camera with Punk sitting next to the owner of the company. It's just such a bizarre situation that I don't know that there is a right answer for what they can do. I think there's going to be enough people on their side in the fan, you know, in the fandom that, you know, they will be behind them regardless of kind of how they handle it. And maybe less is more in this situation, just, you know, keeping it simple and just, you know, hey, there was an altercation. You probably read about it. We can't talk about it, but they were suspended and their suspension's over and now they're back and move on from there. Might be the best way to handle it. I don't know.
I agree. They don't pay us enough to come up with the ideas of what to do to come back. So I'll say that. We'll go to our last phone call for the evening, the 813 area code. I believe this is Jeremy from Tampa.
Yes, it's me. I was just a quick question. And maybe you guys know, I don't know. I'm a Kevin Sullivan fan. Was there ever talk of him coming into the WWF or WWE at any point in his career?
Oh, boy. You know, you almost have to think there was. I mean, he was around for such a long time, not only as a wrestler, but also as, you know, creative. I can't recall any specific instance, though. I know he's done some shoot interviews. I'm sure he's probably talked about it there. But, you know, from the time, you know, the devil-worshipping gimmick in Florida that he did, probably not something the WWF wanted to touch at that time, as tempting as it would have been to bring him in as a heel to face Hulk Hogan maybe during that time period. You know, I may even be dating myself. That may have been even in the 70s when he was doing it before Hulk Hogan, too. But, you know, coming into WCW, I think, you know, what would have hurt him creatively, because he got the book in WCW once his career wound down in the ring, is that WCW was sort of like, during that era, and it wasn't all his fault, you know, he was part of committees and things like that, but WCW was not at its height when he was head of creative. So, you know, when the purchase was made, I don't really know that he was a guy that would have been high on WWE's list to bring in, especially as they were moving away from wrestlers as creative or former wrestlers as creative and working more toward the, you know, Hollywood writers and bringing them in. So he just, you know, it may have just been a case of they just missed the timing on it, John. I don't know if you can provide any more insight on that.
No, you know, I mean, I wasn't following very closely, you know, back in the day don't have any kind of knowledge of it. I'm kind of with you, and just in general, you'd think at some point they would have had at least interest in bringing him in. I don't worry too much about, you know, would his character have fit or this or that, because Vince McMahon, especially in the 80s, would have just created a character for him the way he did with Harley Race, you know, or some of these other guys, you know, plug the wrestler in. So I don't think that would have necessarily, you know, held him back. But no, as no particular knowledge of, like, you know, I'm trying to remember in books I've read, I'm kind of like, was there ever a time when, like, you know, they had serious negotiations or, you know, came close to signing him? There's just nothing that I know of specifically.
Yeah, even if he did come in, I was like, he probably would have been there between 86 and 90 tops.
Yeah, and I mean, he was a short guy, so, you know, he didn't meet the height requirement that WWE would have been looking for in a guy like that. I mean, and, you know, honestly, and you know, Harley Race, bring guys like Harley Race and Ricky Steamboat in who were famous in the NWA, and I think they had a little more national appeal because they were on TBS than Kevin Sullivan. I mean, his appeal at the time was mostly regional in Florida. You know, so, you know, he never reached those major heights, I don't think, in the NWA. Or at the time, it was on the Superstation, TBS, which was going out all over the country. So, yeah, I just don't think, I think it was just a, you know, the timing never worked.
Well, it was just one of those questions I was thinking about earlier. Hey, but gentlemen, have a good weekend. Stay safe, okay?
Thank you, Jeremy.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. All right, John, that'll wrap it up for this evening. Before I let you go, go ahead and let folks know where they can follow you on social media and when they can find your work for The Torch.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at John Mazzera, JonMezzera. And The Torch, I am doing right now the Raw Hits and Misses. I say right now, I've been doing it for like 15 years. But that's all I'm doing. I used to do more, but I kind of at some point had to pull back a little bit and said I can't keep doing you know, three or four shows a week. So right now I've been doing the Raw Hits and Misses, which until last week has been more pleasurable to do. For the last few months, I found the show more enjoyable in general. But Raw Hits and Misses, it usually comes out Wednesday or Thursday. I'm just one of those people who just find it difficult to watch wrestling live. So I'm usually behind a little bit, so unfortunately you're not going to get that instant reaction from me on a Monday night or a Tuesday morning. But, you know, look for Raw Hits and Misses. It's pretty good format we have at The Torch with, I think, just about every show, all the major WWE and AEW shows at least, we have covered with a great group of Hits and Misses specialists and contributors to The Torch. So check out not just my Raw Hits and Misses, but check out all the SmackDown, the NXTs, Dynamites, Rampages. It's Frank Pediani is now doing the WWE PLE Hits and Misses, so we'll probably see one next weekend after Crown Jewel, so keep an eye out for that. I'll throw my buddy Frank a call out for his new position doing the PLE Hits and Misses too.
Yeah, we got a fantastic team of The Torch contributors, columnists, staff, and so pwtorch.com is where you can go for all of your wrestling needs. John, thanks once again for joining me tonight on Wrestling Night in America. Look forward to having you on again soon.
Well, thanks a lot for having me. It's always a blast.
Absolutely. And just a reminder that Zach Hadorn will be with you next Sunday night talking Crown Jewel and all the fallout therein, and I'll be back the following week with Wrestling Night in America on Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, because if it's Sunday, it's Wrestling Night in America.